This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. In the meantime, though, the weekend witnessed the leaders of the G7 economies gather by the Cornwall seaside in the UK for the first G7 summit since the outbreak of the pandemic. It was also US President Joe Biden's first overseas visit since his election victory. And he also took the opportunity to hold bilateral meetings with UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
One of the key outcomes of the summit was a consolidation of the G7 countries' position towards China, including a proposal for a global infrastructure plan that would rival China's Belt and Road Initiative. But I guess how cohesive is the G7 in countering China's economic and political might, and how far does Biden's influence really go?
Joining us for some analysis into this and what was discussed during the summit, we speak this morning with Dr. Adrian Ng, research fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. Adrian, thank you so much for joining us this morning. So what do you read from Biden's choice to make the UK and the G7 meeting his first international appearance? Is this significant?
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. I think it is. I think, you know, Biden has used this opportunity to go on a sort of multilateral tour, not just for the G7, which is itself important, but you have to remember after this, Biden is off to Brussels for a NATO summit. And he will round off his, you know, first foreign trip with a summit meeting with Vladimir Putin in Geneva.
Well, so China remains a key topic, I suppose so, at NATO meetings too. What were the key outcomes about discussions on China, and what bearing could this have for countries in a region like Malaysia and Singapore?
I think, you know, if you look at the joint communique that was issued at the end of the summit, I think it was a very good meeting for Biden and the US in terms of its policies towards China, because it basically hits on all the topics that the US has been trying to emphasize, from human rights. So there was a mention about Xinjiang and Hong Kong. There was a mention also of the Indo-Pacific and the importance of maintaining a free and open Indo-Pacific. The G7 touched on Taiwan, the importance of stability in the Straits and peaceful resolution of any Taiwan issues. There was talk about securing supply chains and ensuring that, again, forced labor from Xinjiang would not be part of these supply chains. There was a renewed call for a investigation into the origins of COVID, and also probably the centerpiece of this was an American-backed, American-designed alternative to China's BRI, the Build Back Better World Plan.
Adrian, how much do we know about the American-led infrastructure plan there? Because that's been one of the checkbook diplomacy has been one key tool in China's arsenal for a few years now. Was there anything particularly interesting from this proposal out of the G7?
So right now, you know, it is very short on the details, but I think, you know, some of the numbers that have been bandied about, you know, 100 million, a couple of 100 million. The problem with that is, you know, if you compare that to the sums that China has set aside for the BRI and utilize, you know, trillions, right? It is just a drop in the bucket. And the other thing is, you know, it is supposed to be a sort of democratic, transparent, clean, green alternative to the BRI. So the other problem I see this B3W plan having is that it offers less in terms of funding, but it also comes with arguably more strings attached than the BRI.
And I guess with this, the overall theme here seems to be, again, trying to coordinate against a bit more of a hawkish stance against China. But what do you make of reports that there is a divide between the G7 members, with some wanting an even more hawkish tone against China, while others prefer to be less combative? What do you make of all this?
Yeah, there were reports, you know, before the summit that, you know, Biden was pushing for a much harder line, and he probably had allies with Macron and Trudeau on his side, whereas Angela Merkel was more reticent. So I guess, you know, this has to be the common ground. But I think, you know, if you were China and looking forward with the German chancellor, you know, retiring very soon in the next year or so, this is probably as good as it's going to get for China in terms of the G7. I think it's only going to get tougher for China from the G7 from here on.
Were there any other outcomes of the summit which particularly stood out for you, Adrian, in terms of being a clear stamp of Biden's influence?
Yeah, I think, again, you know, the notion of bringing the democracies together. I think, you know, with the G7, we are seeing a solidification of the Biden doctrine, which is basically to bring the democracies together and to ensure that the democratic system, democratic values are able to compete with authoritarian China.
Well, just talking about UK and US, Joe Biden and Boris Johnson also held bilateral talks on the sidelines of the summit. Do you see a marked difference in the US-UK relationship under Biden's tenure in contrast with Donald Trump? Although I think Trump and Johnson got along quite well.
Yeah, I don't think there is probably that much difference because, again, as you said, Boris Johnson enjoyed good relations with Biden, and Biden, I believe, is familiar with Johnson from his time as VP under Obama. And again, you know, this special relationship, you know, was sealed before the G7 summit with a signing of a new Atlantic Charter. Again, right, reaffirming the common values and this the strong bilateral relationship between the US and the UK.
Now, one sticking point when we talk about US and UK, it could be the honouring of the Good Friday Agreement with Northern Ireland. How much will Northern Ireland tensions be a sticking point between Biden and Johnson?
I think that was quite clear because I think before the summit, there were already reports that the American ambassador to the UK, right, wanted to make it extremely clear that, right, Biden wanted to ensure that the UK stuck with the so-called Northern Ireland Protocol in its Brexit negotiations or its Brexit agreement with the UK. So Biden has a sort of personal stake in the continued viability of the Good Friday Accords.
And meanwhile, if we look at the US on the domestic front, what's your assessment of Biden's progress in pushing through his agenda? And what do you think he'll be able to achieve before the midterm elections roll around next year?
Right. So, you know, because of the Democratic Party's small majorities in both the House and especially the Senate, I think, you know, Biden has already plucked the low-hanging fruit. So in terms of his infrastructure plan, his plan to engage in voter reforms, those are going to be really tough. He's probably not going to be able to get all or probably maybe even most of what he wants, given that the two most conservative Democratic senators, Manchin and Sinema, right, are not exactly on board with all of Biden's plans so far. So what we're probably going to see is stalemate and everybody sort of getting ready for midterms, which are just, you know, less than a year and a half away.
Adrian, thanks so much for joining us this morning. That was Adrian Ang, a research fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies, giving us a bit of insight into how Joe Biden's been doing as president in his term so far, as well as, of course, the outcome of the G7 summit.
Well, Biden is an old hand in foreign policies, right? International matters. I think he's sat on some committees in relation to foreign policy setting. But I think I'm really interested in the global infrastructure plan that the G7 hope to cobble together to rival the Belt and Road Initiative, but a little details at the moment. But if human rights is going to be a priority, I'm not sure how far this plan is going to go, right? Especially among some emerging markets that still need to step up on human rights matters. And while there's a lot of cash sloshing around the markets, money is not free, and there'll be many conditions, as Adrian points out.
I mean, I also was particularly watching the whole vaccination situation, right? They're talking about 1 billion vaccines to the countries that need it the most. Of course, this is after they've sorted themselves out with buying more, way more vaccines than they needed in the first place and creating shortage for the rest of us. But, you know, that 1 billion doses is still far, far short of the 11 billion doses the WHO said it needs to vaccinate at least 70% of the world's population to truly end the pandemic. So, yeah, maybe some optimistic wording, but if you take a look like under the hood a little bit, it gets a little bit hypocritical at some points, but also just maybe just not enough.
Yeah, so something I guess we'll have to see what effectively practical means comes out of this G7 summit. But right now we're heading into some messages, and then up next we'll be speaking with Dr. Tharani Loganathan, public health specialist at University of Malaya, on the Home Ministry's crackdown on undocumented migrant workers. Stay tuned for that after these messages, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.